Welcome to this edition of Juniper Networks JNews Audio Update. News you need to make company-altering and career-advancing decisions. Give us 10 minutes and get exclusive perspectives on excellent leadership strategies. It'll be worth your time and maybe worth your next promotion. With attacks on corporate networks almost doubling each year and with most intrusions invisible to network administrators, this issue of JNews spotlights e-crime and network security threats. We'll investigate how you and your enterprise can win the war against hackers, spammers, and criminals. Also in this issue of JNews, correspondent Carol Wilson speaks with Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism czar for both the Bill Clinton and George W. Bush administrations, discussing top security issues facing small to mid-size enterprises.
The attackers don't know how big you are. They just go after you automatically.
Then Doug Torrey of the Catholic Health System of Buffalo takes us through the challenge of providing remote access to sensitive patient information.
It's easy to use, but it's also very secure and very flexible.
But first, David Flynn, Vice President in Juniper Networks Security Products Group, explores the changing network security environment, as well as ways to keep your business competitive in a threatening marketplace.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm David Flynn. I'm the Vice President of Products in Juniper Security Products Group, and I'm responsible for driving the product management and product marketing for our security products, as well as for our recently introduced J-Series CPE router product line. When I look at the environment we're facing, we're seeing some fundamental changes in this networking environment that make the status quo networks that people have been running today no longer good enough. And there's really two macro changes that are driving this change in network requirements. The first is what we call the disappearance of the trusted network. And by this, I mean that the traditional perimeter security model is no longer sufficient for securing the network because of increased mobility of PCs, increased interconnection between organizations, applications like extranets, and also new security attacks that make it impossible to define a rigid network perimeter that can be secured against attack. The second macro trend we're seeing is the need to run multiple differentiated services over a single network infrastructure. And one of the most obvious trends here is, of course, the move to put voice and data over the same network infrastructure. These two requirements taken together are creating a need to build a new kind of network, one that delivers what we call a secured and assured networking experience. And when we look at these new network requirements, we see that we need to deliver innovations that drive the secured and assured networking intelligence in three directions: inward, outward, and upward. When I say outward, what I mean is that the perimeter is no longer defined by just the router and the firewall that connects the enterprise headquarters to the public network. Enterprises are now facing a perimeter that extends to mobile workers, telecommuters, branch offices, and business partners. We need to help them to extend this secured and assured experience outward from that traditional perimeter to these new endpoints. At the same time we extend the secured and assured experience outward, we also need to drive it inward into the campus infrastructure to increase the security inside the campus network, because you can no longer count on your campus being a secure network because of the mobility of people that maybe have gotten infected on the outside of the campus with a laptop, and they walk through the front door and traverse your traditional perimeter security infrastructure, you can now easily be compromised inside the network. And at the same time we're extending these capabilities inward and outward, we need to drive it a third direction, upward. And what I mean by that is that we need to move from network-level intelligence to application-level intelligence, security, and assurance. So we need networks that not only deliver the quality of service and performance and resiliency needed to support applications, but we need to move beyond that to deliver application-level threat prevention that can block application-level attacks, and also application usage control capabilities that can dictate how employees use applications on your network. Juniper is delivering the solutions that enable you to move beyond the status quo networks of today to networks that deliver the secured and assured experience you need to address these new requirements. In this issue of JNews, we will explore the changing network security environment and the options you have for keeping your business competitive in the face of these new challenges. Thank you.
Hi, this is Carol Wilson, Editor-at-Large of Telephony Magazine, and I'm here today with Richard Clark, former National Security Advisor, and we're going to be talking about security issues for small to mid-sized businesses. Mr. Clark, you're very well known as a former National Security Advisor, but many people may not be familiar with what you're doing now. Why don't you bring us up to date?
What I'm doing now is teaching at Harvard, writing a column on security for the New York Times Magazine, the ABC television on-air consultant on security and terrorism issues, and I run a little consulting firm in Virginia called Good Harbor Consulting.
Okay. Given the breadth of your experience in national security, what issues do you think small to mid-sized businesses need to be concerned about?
Well, I think what businesses are worried about is theft of intellectual property, downtime, theft of their customers' identification, whether that's social security numbers or credit card numbers. There's a whole range of crime that takes place in cyberspace, all of which affects small companies as much as it does large companies.
But do you think small to mid-sized businesses are aware of these concerns and are taking them seriously enough?
Well, I think some of the polling data indicates that mid-sized companies are actually increasing their spending on security at a rate faster than the large companies. So I think we're seeing large companies spending on the order of 8% of their IT budget on security. But the smaller to mid-sized companies are spending as much as 12%.
So what are some of the specific things that these companies should be doing with that spending?
Well, of course, it depends upon the nature of the company. If the company is doing business online, and if that's where most of their commerce is done, then their priority is probably to keep that website up and to avoid denial of service attacks. And people think, well, who's going to have a denial of service attack against me? Well, there are thousands of denial of service attacks every month that are conducted by what we call bot networks, networks of zombie computers that randomly select IP addresses and attack them. Sometimes they specifically attack organizations to blackmail them and say, we'll stop a denial of service attack if you will pay us. So that's the key concern for companies that are doing business online. But for any company that relies upon the web for communications, there is the potential that someone can hack their way into your system and steal credit card numbers, can steal privacy information, can steal your customer list, and then they can go out and sell to the same customers for less. They can steal your formulas, your pre-patent material, your intellectual property.
But do you think small to mid-sized businesses are aware of these concerns and are taking them seriously enough?
Well, again, it varies dramatically by the nature of the business. Certain sectors are notorious for not taking these things seriously, and I refer to, for example, the medical community. Doctors, clinics, small hospitals are notorious for not paying attention to these sorts of things. What they don't understand frequently is that the kinds of attacks that take place are programmed and are automatic. They don't involve necessarily a human deciding to go after your company. Rather, your internet connection has an IP number. And what will happen frequently is that an attack program will just go from one IP number to the next, not knowing whether it's the public library, a large firm, or a tiny firm. And it will probe that IP address for a known vulnerability. And if the company receiving the attack hasn't got the latest up-to-date software, the patches for the known faults in the software, then chances are this automatic hacker will get in. And what they do when they get in varies enormously. Sometimes they take over the site without your knowing it and use it as a base for their operations. Sometimes they just copy everything on your files, and sometimes they delete everything on your files. But people who think, oh, I'm just a small company, no one would ever come after me, need to realize that the attackers don't know how big you are. They just go after you automatically.
Well, that's a really interesting point. The size of the company has no impact on whether you're vulnerable. But let me ask you, other than keeping software packages up to date, are there specific things that you would recommend a small to mid-sized business owner do?
Well, I think that there are three things that need to be kept up to date, and that means kept up to date where changes may occur every day. And that's antivirus software, it's firewall software, and it's operating system software. Most people's operating system is Windows. All of those could be changing on a daily basis in terms of the software that you need. So you need programs that will look on a daily basis to see if those changes have occurred. That's the most important thing. And then beyond that, having what we call identity access management, so that someone has to prove that they are the owner of an account when they log in. Not simply using a password, because passwords can be easily broken. But having two-factor authentication, using a smart card or a chip or something else to log in, makes it very, very difficult for hackers to get in.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'd also like to ask you to speak about a new alliance group I understand you're aware of called the Cybersecurity Industry Alliance.
Now, the Cybersecurity Industry Alliance is, as the name suggests, an alliance of the companies that do business selling software and hardware to create cybersecurity. So these are companies like Symantec and McAfee, the two competitors, who both come up with most of the antivirus software, and lots of other companies that are engaged in designing and implementing security on the web. And what they're trying to do is to educate the public about what the needs are and work with the government on a sharing of responsibility, because there are some things that the government has to do, some things that software companies have to do, and some things that the user has to do, whether the user is a grandmother or a large company. Not one of these three groups, the government, the software companies, and the users, not one of these three groups alone can solve the problem. But all three have to work together, and each has distinct responsibilities. And what the alliance is trying to do is get an agreement that we can all understand.
Terrific. Richard Clark, I really thank you for your time today. This has been very helpful.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, this is Carol Wilson with JNews, and I'm here with Doug Torrey of the Catholic Health System of Buffalo. Doug, why don't you tell us about the Catholic Health System of Buffalo and the challenges you face trying to provide doctors with remote access to patient information?
Sure, my pleasure. Basically, the Catholic Health System was formed in 1998 when four different hospitals merged together, and the merger was basically out of financial necessity. Healthcare, as I'm sure most are aware, is a very financially challenged industry. So back in 1998, these hospitals came together to join forces and to basically reduce costs and reduce expenses. With that, the first thing we did was we joined our infrastructure. We tried to become more efficient in terms of the ways we operated. We had, at the time, several different systems and several different methods of remote access. Most of them were dial-up and slow, and those were some of the challenges that we faced. They were slow systems, they were difficult to access, and they weren't very efficient.
So, Doug, how did you initially approach the problem of providing telemedicine in a cost-effective way to these different facilities?
Well, the first approach that we had was to leverage the internet and broadband to basically pump up the volume in terms of speed and performance. So with the prevalence of broadband access, cable modems, and DSL, we then deployed a IPsec VPN concentrator. And with that, we rolled out teleradiology program to 10 radiologists on our staff. And the way that was designed, the radiologist had a CD-ROM that we sent home with them that had instructions and client software, and then they would configure the client on their PC to connect up to our VPN. They would authenticate with two-factor authentication, and then they'd also have to have the client software for the application installed on their PC so that they could access these radiology images remotely. What ended up happening during that initial rollout of the 10 physicians was that the plans for self-installation of these remote devices didn't work very smoothly, and basically we ended up configuring and sending pre-configured computers home with the physicians for the access to make it reliable and workable. So that was the initial 10-person rollout and project. Then from that point, we moved on, and we had another project request come in, and this one was for a much larger initiative to give 500 physicians remote access to patient information. We knew that that method and that design of our first attempt would not be very successful because of the need to deploy PCs. It was way out of budget. It wasn't very workable. There was a lot of support issues. We would have needed to scale up a lot of support individuals, so we knew that wasn't a workable design. So we immediately started focusing on a lighter way to do that. First thing that came to mind was e-commerce, and the e-commerce model uses SSL for connecting securely to e-commerce sites. So we decided to leverage that. We found a product from Juniper that did just that, the Web VPN product, and that was a secure access way of coming into our network but not requiring the software on the client and the VPN configuration of the client, et cetera. But yet it gave us the confidence and the security of the same robust encryption to encrypt the data, which is important for HIPAA reasons.
Okay. Can you tell us why this browser-based approach has proven so valuable?
Well, I think the main reason it's so valuable is because it's so ubiquitous, and by that I mean everyone of the folks that are remote users have already had experiences using a browser previously. So there was no big learning curve for our users. They were familiar with the browser interface already from using it on their home PC, their office PCs, etc. They've used online e-commerce sites. They've used online e-banking and so on. So they have a familiarity with that interface, and it's a very intuitive interface. In addition, it's been valuable because there's been very, very minimal support. The support has been more on the applications themselves, which is what we would expect, versus the applications plus a big remote access support burden with figuring out rules and layers and installing clients and so on and so forth. So it's been very valuable in terms of very minimal support and very reliable service and very scalable service.
And what have been the financial and productivity benefits of this approach?
Well, I would say the single biggest financial benefit has been the reduction in support or the minimal increase in support. We didn't have to add a whole team of individuals. We didn't have to buy 500 PCs. Can you imagine the expense of that? So it's been very, very, very strong in terms of financial benefit because we didn't have to make that investment. In addition to avoiding those significant costs, we've also feel very good about the overall security of the solution. It meets all of our HIPAA concerns relative to audit trails and strong authentication and encryption. And so from that perspective, we feel very, very comfortable with rolling out our application in this fashion. It's easy to use, but it's also very secure and very flexible. So the HIPAA compliance was another very important piece for us. In terms of productivity, the end users enjoy it as well because, as we've discussed, they're very comfortable with the interface. So overall, I think it's a great package of good finances, good financial sense, and also ease of use. It's a very strong combination.
Okay, Doug Torrey, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on Juniper Networks News. Whether you need critical, legacy to leading-edge security solutions or innovative leadership blueprints from today's technology visionaries, you'll get it all with the next edition of JNews, where the J stands for Juniper, and the news is thoughtful, provocative, accurate, and always relevant.